We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal. Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. Most American workers take certain things for granted. The right to a minimum wage, the right to be paid for working overtime, access to worker compensation if they're injured. But in low-wage labor markets, many employment laws are regularly and routinely violated, affecting the lives of many workers in the nation's largest cities. This morning, in this hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking about some of the findings of a recent study looking at conditions for low-wage workers in America's three largest cities, Chicago among them. The report is called Broken Laws, Unprotected Workers, Violations of Employment and Labor Laws in America's Cities. And we'll be talking with one of the authors of this study, Nick Theodore. He's director of the Center for Urban Economic Development and associate professor in the Department of Urban Planning and Policy at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions and comments from people who are listening are certainly welcome. The only thing that we ask of callers is that people are brief as possible, and we ask that so that we can keep the program moving along and get in as many different callers as possible. But certainly, callers are welcome. Comments and questions are welcome. If you are listening here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number to use is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good for anybody who would be making a long-distance call. So we'll pay for the call, and that number is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. At any point here, questions, comments are certainly welcome. And Professor Theodore, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for talking with us. We appreciate it. Let's just start off talking a little bit about the survey itself. You talked to more than 4,000 people working in low-wage industries in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York City. Perhaps you might talk to us a little bit more about how this study came to be.
Sure. For years, we had been hearing from legal aid lawyers, community organizations, in some cases government enforcement agencies, about problems in the low-wage labor market, specifically around employers' failure to pay many of our basic labor law, follow many of our basic labor laws, such as paying the minimum wage, paying for overtime, and so on. But the problem is that while we may have had studies that looked at certain parts of the economy, let's say restaurant workers or construction workers, we really didn't have any studies that systematically looked across the low-wage labor market as a whole. And for that reason, we didn't have any reliable numbers that could estimate the prevalence of the types of problems that were being raised by advocates on the ground.
Mm. And what, just generally speaking, what sort of work are the people that we're talking about in this study doing?
Well, we're talking about a range of industries and occupations, everything from retail, restaurants and grocery stores, to caregivers like home health care workers and domestic workers, construction workers, food, garment manufacturing, warehousing, personal services like car wash workers, laundry workers, beauty and nail salon workers, and building services like janitors and security guards. So you can see it's a wide range of industries and occupations. It's both manufacturing and services, white collar and blue collar.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, again, to state the basic conclusion here is that people no doubt think that there are a variety of laws, a variety of protections that are in place that I suppose apply to all workers, but particularly are there to provide some kind of floor, like minimum wage, for example, under the most the people who are at the lower edge of the wage scale. And your overall conclusion that is that this is not working in the way that it's intended, or perhaps people in fact, think that it is.
Exactly. We found widespread violations of many of our core labor laws, and it suggests that enforcement and the traction of these laws in the low end of the labor market simply isn't what the law says it should be. And so we're finding workers exposed to all manner of violations.
Let's talk about some of the basic things, and I guess we can start right with wages. What you found is that more than a quarter of the people that you surveyed were paid less than the legally required minimum wage, or at least in the previous week before you talked to them.
Exactly. So we conducted the 4,387 face-to-face interviews with workers in the three cities, and we did find that 26% of workers in our sample were paid less than the legally required minimum wage. And I think what's important here is we're not talking about, you know, a few pennies an hour. The minimum wage violations that we uncovered in our survey were not trivial in magnitude. 60% of those workers were underpaid by more than $1 an hour.
Uh-huh. And also, you've discovered that something like a quarter or more than a quarter of the people that you talked to worked more than 40 hours the previous week, and most of them, like three quarters of them, were not paid the legally required overtime that they were required to pay by their employers.
Exactly. You know, covered employees are required to receive time and a half for hours over 40 in a work week. And we found that many were paid straight time, but even many were paid nothing at all for those hours. Many of them had flat weekly salaries. So maybe you could think of a worker in a kitchen in a restaurant who maybe was receiving a $400 flat weekly salary, but the number of hours that worker might be employed could range from 35 to 60, depending on how busy the restaurant was that week. In many of those cases, we found overtime violations.
Mm-hmm.
And as was the case with the minimum wage violations, these overtime violations were not trivial in magnitude either. We found that the average worker with a violation put in an extra 11 hours of overtime that was either unpaid or not paid at all.
Yeah, and there, I think there's a key point there. You said it could possibly be not paid at all. There apparently are people who are working more than their regular shift, and not only are they not getting paid overtime, there are some people who were working more than 40 hours, and for the hours outside of the 40 hours, some people weren't paid anything.
Yeah, and often you know, folks say, how can that be? You know, why would a worker put up with this? And the workers, many of the workers that we spoke to when we interviewed them outside the survey but did in-depth interviews, said, look, you know, they would approach the employer, and the employer says, hey, if you don't like it, you know, there's 20 more people outside waiting to take your job. And so it just looked like for many workers in the low-wage labor market, especially during tough economic times, this is just a cost of doing business.
And that's, again, that just to underscore the point you made, and, you know, no doubt that what we have here is people who really, they need the work, they need the work, they need the job, they need the income, they need to support themselves and their families, and they're not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize that, and standing up and saying, hey, you're not paying me for the hours that I'm working, they're just simply not going to do that.
Exactly. I think it's very tough for a low-wage worker, someone trying to support themselves and their families on lower income to be responsible for enforcing the nation's core labor employment laws. That's where we need government enforcement to step in to handle that, because the threats of retaliation, the threats of losing that job, the penalties are just too high for that worker.
Well, then that gets to the question, who is responsible for making sure that people are paid the legal minimum wage, that if they're supposed to be getting overtime, that they are, and that they're actually paid for the work that they're done, that they're doing?
Well, you know, I think the solution to these kinds of problems has to come from a number of quarters. First and foremost, employers need to follow the law. But as our study showed, you know, I think there are a number of unscrupulous employers, and then in some industries, I think it's just become standard business practice to violate overtime laws and so on. The second is, when that fails, government enforcement agencies need to step in. But over the last 8 to 10 years, we've seen the capacity of our government enforcement agencies especially at the federal level, being withered. I mean, it has really eroded. The number of establishments in the country has increased dramatically, yet the number of investigators has actually decreased. And so, I think it's incumbent on the Obama administration and Secretary Solis in Washington to redouble the country's commitment to enforcing our core labor standards.
The guest in this part of Focus 580 is Nick Theodore. He's director of the Center for Urban Economic Development and associate professor in the Department of Urban Planning and Policy at the University of Illinois Chicago, one of the authors of a recently issued report titled Broken Laws, Unprotected Workers, Violations of Employment and Labor Laws in America's Cities. And it takes a look at some of the experiences of people who are low-wage workers in three big cities, Chicago being one of them. And the conclusion of the report is that routinely, labor laws are not being followed, and we've given a couple concrete examples. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have some callers here. We'll bring them into the conversation, starting with someone in Champaign, and this is line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. What, in terms of the variation, or the, you know, you said the with the average 41%, was that correct or something rather? I don't know what in terms of not well, let's say based on income, are there certain industries that you know that percentage is much higher?
Yeah, the violations don't occur evenly across the low wage labor market as a whole, and there were a number of industries and occupations that we found that had particularly high violation rates. The one that really jumped out are domestic workers. And oftentimes you see domestic workers getting flat daily or flat weekly or flat monthly pay, but the hours that they actually work vary dramatically. And so we found workers in private households had very high minimum wage violation rates. Another was in apparel and textile manufacturing. This is more common in Los Angeles. But in apparel and textile manufacturing, you often have workers paid by the piece. And the quotas that are established by employers often are very difficult to attain. It also, because you're paid by the piece, it's sometimes difficult for employees to figure out their wage rates. And so we found more than 40% of workers in apparel and textile manufacturing had a minimum wage violation rate.
Now, what about what would be in your study? How many? What would be the percentage of the undocumented workers?
Yeah, hang on. We did survey across the labor market and asked a range of questions around demographic characteristics, including immigration status. And we did find that there were three groups in particular that had very high violation rates: women, immigrants in general, and people of color, all at higher violation rates. Undocumented women in particular had especially high violation rates. And so the violation rates were, on balance, higher for undocumented immigrants. But I think what was striking to us is that all workers were at risk. This is the differences in violation rates between undocumented immigrants and other demographic groups wasn't as high as one might think.
Is this the study available online at all or not?
It is. We have a website. Let me see. Let me just pull it up. And it's at our website at urbaneconomy.org.
Okay, good.
It's urbaneconomy, all one word, .org. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Here, you just touched on something again to go back to, I think is really important, where you talked about the fact that, yes, there were certain groups within the large low-wage worker group that maybe are more vulnerable, particularly people who are undocumented and women, and then undocumented women even more so. So one might think that employers would look at those workers and think that they could violate the laws with impunity, and maybe indeed that they do. But I think it's interesting that it's not that the differences between those people and anybody else are really small. So it would say that perhaps employers are looking at all of these low-wage workers, and in a sense they see them all in the same. They're not making fine distinctions between who they can most take advantage of. It sounds like they're taking advantage of all of them in a fairly uniform manner.
Yeah, I think in the end, it's not who you are so much, but where you work that drives the violations, which industry and which occupation, which employer. And so it is, it, from our study, it does seem that violating various labor laws has become standard business practice in certain industries and for workers in certain occupations. And so, you know, like the apparel and textile manufacturing or grocery stores and others, it, we do see violation rates that are very, very high, regardless of the race or gender, regardless of the immigration status, regardless of the age of workers.
To another caller here in Geneva, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, I was just you answered some of what I was going to ask gentleman before me, but I'm in the construction industry, and I see a lot of people out there, especially landscapers, taking advantage of what you said, undocumented. But they, for some reason, have a way to get around that. I don't know why people don't crack down on it. We got undocumented slash, you know, and they're giving out cash to pay. And I know this has been happening in other, say, retail chains where they, if you go over overtime, they basically give you cash to kind of walk, you know, not worry about the law so much. There's ways that they have been able to work around. Because I was one of those people. I was constantly being pulled aside to go do tons over. It goes from 40 hours or 39 hours to 80 hours sometimes in 1 week. And that extra 40 hours or extra whatever it was, they paid me cash in. How do you guys think you're going to – oh, how do you think they would – the Obama administration is going to keep track with it? They're going to have to hire an awful lot of people because there's too many small places that they're charging – that are you know, the way the pay system is set up in this country, mm-hmm. they're taking advantage of every loophole they can get.
Right. Well, after the study release, Secretary of Labor Hilda Solis announced the hiring of the commitment to hire several hundred new investigators. But I think you're raising another issue, which is there are certain industries that have, because of the pay systems and because of employment practices in those industries, we see widespread violations. It's the same kind of we often see also health and safety violations in those very same industries. So you look at the construction industry, the industry that the caller just mentioned, which is also associated with very high health and safety violations. In those cases, I think what the Obama administration needs to do and the Secretary of Labor is to target those industries where violations are highest, and to enforce the law vigorously, both to send a message to potentially unscrupulous employers that this won't be allowed, and also to lift standards in those industries. This hurts those employers that pay by the rules when you have unscrupulous employers that are cutting corners as a way to remain competitive and profitable.
Yeah, that's why I'm getting out of it. There's too many. I spent too much money on time and effort trying to do all the right things, and they're just way. Especially now, there's people that used to be, their jobs used to be other than construction, and they're taking advantage of the system in more ways than one. Contractor fraud is just enormous out there. I just beware of people. I always tell people, just be aware of these guys that come in and want to do something for, you know, next to nothing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just to get back to a basic question here, when we're talking about the people, the government employees, officials, the people who are responsible for seeing that the laws are followed, do they conduct random kind of inspections of businesses to make sure they are following the laws, or are they relying on someone to make some kind of complaint? And that then would cause them to go to a specific time, to go to a specific employer.
For the most part, it's been complaint-driven, right. I think, which is one of the issues. And for all the reasons we just spoke about, threats of retaliation, fear of losing one's job, and so on, it kind of chills, you know, has a chilling impact on the workplace and the willingness of workers to be able to step forward. I think where we have seen some successes are with worker workers' rights organizations that are close to the ground, that are in close contact with workers, and they're able to pool some of the complaints at particular employers and then work as a liaison to states' departments of labor or the U.S. Department of Labor to try to inform the Department of Labor and enforcement agencies about some of the conditions that are being experienced in a given workplace or in a given industry. And I think we've seen these types of workers' rights organizations operating in the restaurant industry, in the construction industry, in the garment industry. And maybe this is one of those necessary stakeholders that have to participate in a web of enforcement. But I think what they're able to do is they're able to have close contact with workers in a way that workers don't fear retaliation, and they're able to get the story that that often is going missed.
All right, let's take another call. Someone on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was wondering if his study also included the trucking industry.
We didn't, at least not in the Chicago area, because the trucking industry wages tended to be higher than the cutoff that we were using. So we didn't get much into the trucking industry, but there's been a lot of research on this industry, and you know the trucks are often referred to as sweatshops on wheels because of the long hours and low pay that many drivers in the industry have to endure.
I was curious because, as far as I'm concerned, as you said, sweatshops on wheels, as far as I'm concerned, we're one of the most abused employees out here, and I was just curious. So thank you very much.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you for the call. We're just about at our midpoint here of this hour of Focus 580. And let me introduce again our guest for anyone who might have tuned in the last 10 or 15 minutes. We're talking with Nick Theodore. He's director of the Center for Urban Economic Development and associate professor in the Department of Urban Planning and Policy at the University of Illinois Chicago. And one of the contributors to a recently issued report, taking a look at conditions for low-wage workers in three big American cities, Chicago being one of them. The report is called Broken Laws, Unprotected Workers, Violations of Employment and Labor Laws in America's Cities. And as he suggested, if you're interested in reading the report, you can get at it by going to their website, which is urbaneconomy.org. I'm sure that you can see it there. And the basic point that they make is that in low-wage labor markets, many employment laws are regularly violated, and that affects the lives of many workers in the nation's largest cities. And here we're talking about things like being paid minimum wage, being paid overtime, access to worker compensation, and so forth. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the things that you state here in the report is that a significant number of workers said that even though they had a problem, such as they knew that they were not being paid the minimum wage or were not being paid for the hours that they were working or something that had to do with dangerous working conditions, that a significant number of people said even though they had a problem, they didn't say anything about it to their employer. And for the reason that we can understand, as you mentioned, that they were afraid of losing their job. What happened, though, there were a small number of people who, in fact, said they had complained. What happens to those people?
Well, I think all too often the fears that many workers are worried about become borne out. And so we did talk to many who did have their wages cut or received worse work assignments that did experience some form of retaliation. Now, in rare cases, employers did respond, especially when it had to do with improving some of the safety conditions at the workplace. Again, I think in a lot of our conversations with workers and the statistical evidence bears it out as well, they're really the fears of retaliation and the worries that, you know, complaining just won't do anything anyway leads workers to kind of just take it and be quiet and try to get the work done and hope for a better day the next day.
All right. Next, we'll talk with someone in Chicago on our toll-free line. Line four here. Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Yes.
I think your panelist meant to say, when he referred to workers' rights organizations, he meant to say unions, didn't he? That's what unions are supposed to do. And some of the big unions, the newer union, enlarging unions such as Service Employees International and AFSCME have done a fairly good job of attempting to get these low-wage workers into unions so they can be protected. Part of the problem is some of the industries you're referring to, such as construction, traditionally have been controlled by unions that are pretty corrupt, have very little interest in bringing in low-wage workers whatsoever. Specifically, the Carpenters Union is one of the worst ones. Their top leadership is totally Republican. They have no interest at all in bringing in low-wage workers. The one caller was talking about these how these things are done. Mayor Daley has a very nice flowers he plants every year. That's one of the a great example of how they do this. They hire two people at the wage that they're supposed to be hired at, and the guy splits his wages with the second guy who's not reported at all. He's not even on the books. And you see all those guys out there playing with those flowers, making the Lakeshore Drive and expressways look really pretty. You're looking at fraud. Not by those two guys, but by the city of Chicago fundamentally. Although when it goes through several layers of subcontracting, one after another, it's extremely hard to get at. After it's layered upon layered upon layer, it's very difficult to find out how that's going on. That's my only comment.
Well, all right. You're there in Chicago, Professor Theodore. You want to comment on that?
Well, you know, in our sample, we didn't find very high levels of unionization, I think partly because of the industries and occupations that we were looking at. So industries like the restaurant industry, the caller mentioned the construction industry. Mostly we were looking at residential construction, which doesn't have very high union density. And so the ability of unions to influence working conditions in many of the industries we're looking at, care, you know, private households and so on, is pretty low. And I think that's why we've seen these workers' rights organizations. I wasn't referring to unions in that case, but we've seen workers' rights organizations try to step in into that void where both government enforcement agencies haven't been terribly effective and many unions aren't doing organizing. But you know, I think as the caller mentioned, there are a number of cases, the Service Employees International Union and others, that have been aggressively trying to organize workers, home care workers and others. And my guess is that we will see, to the extent that those organizing efforts are successful, some improvement in conditions for those workers.
Well, that, I suppose, gets back to this question. What's the more powerful factor here, that perhaps unions don't think that it's worth trying to organize these workers, or that employers are doing whatever they can to discourage the workers from attempting to organize?
Well, you know, I think it's more the latter. Several years ago, we completed a study looking at employer interference and union organizing campaigns in the Chicago metropolitan area, and employers have become very sophisticated in deterring union organizing drives. Many are hiring law firms and consulting companies to manage the anti-union campaign. And in Chicago, which is normally regarded as a strong union city, we still found You know, employers were quite capable of navigating the gray areas around the law and discouraging union organizing campaigns. I think in other cases with some of our industries, you know, we're talking about small employers. There's not a lot of economies of scale or bang for the buck for organizing workers that are spread over a large geographical area in many, many workplaces. And so with the resources that some unions have, they haven't been able to organize those workers, or it hasn't made sense, with their organizing model. So I think it's a bit of a combination, but certainly employers have been sophisticated, and the law in many ways has been on their side to allow them to stymie any kind of union organizing drive.
All right, let's talk with another caller in Urbana, line one, right here. Hello.
Yes, Professor, surely you would agree that the main impediment to worker organizing is the Taft-Hartley Act. Though I'm a supporter of the Employee Free Choice Act, to what extent would you say that the Employee Free Choice Act obfuscates or repeals the Taft-Hartley Act, which nobody seems to be bringing up? Thank you for taking my question. I'll ring off.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to answer that. I don't know. I don't understand the nature of how that I don't know. I'm sorry I can't answer that question.
All right. Well, other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's talk about something we haven't touched on, and that has to do with workers' comp and what the experiences of people have been when they've been injured on the job.
Well, our workers' compensation laws our workers' compensation system does not seem to be functioning for workers in the low-wage labor market. The workers in our sample who experienced a serious injury on the job, only 8% filed a workers' comp claim. So we're really talking about a system that is not touching this segment of the labor market. When workers told their employers about the injury, about 50% experienced a form of illegal employer retaliation, such as firing the worker, calling immigration authorities, and so on. And so really what we find is workers kind of on their own there, trying to pay for their medical coverage out of their own pocket. But because of their low wages, that obviously puts a severe strain on family resources. And so here, too, I think, our basic systems, our basic employment systems and the workers' compensation laws simply are not having the effect that they are intended to have to improve the working conditions experienced by workers in lower wage jobs.
So is this a matter of laws that aren't as strong as perhaps they should be? Or would you say that the laws are adequate, but the problem here is enforcement?
I think in some cases we do have the laws on the books, but the penalties associated with violating those laws are simply too weak. And so I think in some cases we need to have much stronger penalties as a deterrent to employers that might be persuaded to break the law. But we really have an enforcement problem. And as I said initially, that over the last 8 years or so, we've really seen the capacity of our enforcement agencies at the federal level it really has withered. It really has eroded. And there needs to be a much stronger commitment to protecting the rights of all workers in the workplace. But as our study shows, there's this particular need at the low end of the labor market.
Mm-hmm. Was this, I talked in the beginning that this study here, the survey, was based on your having talked to something more than 4,000 individuals in Los Angeles, Chicago, and in New York. Was it difficult to find people to talk to and get them to talk to you?
We used the technique we used was borrowed from research that is being conducted in the public health field. There are this family of new adaptive sampling techniques that make use of workers or individual social networks, but have a lot of mathematics behind it to correct for selection bias. And what I mean by this is that through successive waves of sampling and some adjustments, we're able to develop prevalence estimates